rear window that trombone shot, though.
It's Flicks in That with Steve Newell.
Steve!
Afternoon.
Oh, might just get that one.
Classic.
Is it working now?
Afternoon.
Hey, yes. Welcome. That's what it sounded like before, pretty much. A little bit less suspect.
Yeah, I think I was a bit more confident on the first afternoon.
I've dashed you.
Oh, well.
You've come prepared with a speech, though, right? You know what to say?
Yeah, rustle the paper.
What are you watching? Actually have a bit of paper. Oh, there we go.
What are you watching this week, Steve Newell?
Foldy.
Well, I'm not sure what you're watching, but I've checked out the new New Zealand music documentary Dawn Raid, which opens in cinemas tomorrow. And I had a bloody good time doing so.
I hear it's good.
There's nothing like sitting in a busy movie theatre and an audience ripples at the... You know, New Zealanders respond to things that are familiar on the screen. Mm. It's kind of like vibe in the room. And I don't think I've ever experienced more of a ripple than when the Boost Mobile hookup ad played on the big screen during the Dawn Raid documentary. What a slice of all of our lives that ad was. Flip phones, graffiti traversing the whole country.
The
MCs.
Graffiti was ripping, actually, at that time. Eh? There's some good bombs going around.
Graffiti plus computers, plus ads, plus a big telecommunications budget.
That's a busy weekend.
Indeed.
The screening you went to, was it a media screening or a special, like, stars and industry people screening?
John, you'll be delighted to know that for once I paid for my bloody movie ticket. Mm-hmm. And I went to an early public screening.
Okay.
So no razzle dazzle, no red carpet, just a bunch of keen beans trying to get a glimpse of this film early. I had a really good time. I think it feels like not so long ago I was sitting here talking about another New Zealand music documentary that was about a band in the sort of mid-career vibes. And the big difference with Dawn Raid, of course, is that, you know, this is kind of celebrating stuff that has happened probably just long enough ago to have a bit of a whiff of nostalgia about it. So it's great to see Andy and Danny's kind of like early news appearances, getting their hustle on as they really built a hip-hop label out of nothing but maybe some smoke and mirrors at the kind of early phases. Of course, let's not forget the artists, but as well as artists, you also need money and media. And
how good is money? Yeah.
This doco chronicles how good they were at gaining both of those. However, as a student of history would know, empires fall, and that is, you know, part of the Dawn Raid story as well. Although the film really is mostly a celebration of quite a cultural moment, and one that probably, I don't know, if you look back at it through a 2021 lens, it doesn't seem so, it seems more commonplace, I guess, like for an artist to go off and like make a record in New York isn't weird for a New Zealand artist so much anymore.
Mm.
But when Mareko did it, it was wild.
Mm.
And so it kind of recaptures a bit of that energy of the star-making machinery in New Zealand maybe wasn't quite what it is today, let's put it that way.
Was there a ton of footage available for this particular docker?
Yeah, there is, and so it's not just from, you know, news interviews and the welcome site of music vids, and it's great seeing a music video, you know, from yesteryear on a big screen and through a big cinema PA. That's quite fun.
Mm.
But also because hip hop labels are all about self promotion, they had a video camera loads, so there's heaps of stuff that they shot, and you know, they definitely did rock around Auckland and New Zealand with their video camera being hip-hop label guys, which it's what you're supposed to do. I think we can all agree it's a good thing that they did so. And this turns up in the doco as well. It's Oscar Keitley directs. He does a really good job. He's had a long relationship with both Andy Murnane and Brother D, who are the two main guys in Dawn Raid. But he... you know, it gets them to tell their story pretty well. It's not a narrated documentary. They're there looking down, effectively looking the audience in the eye and telling their very personal story.
Mm.
It works a bloody treat.
Okay.
Recommend.
Oh, good.
Now, I've also been watching the new TV adaptation of Stephen King's The Stand. This one doesn't come with such a strong recommend. I'm 6 episodes into this now.
Oh, when do you give up or turn back? Or
well, I was almost at the giving up point today until a character who looked a lot like Starboy turned up, and that sustained my interest for a little bit longer. Mm. This show isn't completely working, as you can tell from my comments. But I mean, neither did the first go adapting The Stand for the screen, which was a TV miniseries, which is pretty clunky if you take that for a spin now.
I have no idea what The Stand even is or anything.
Is it a classic Stephen King novel?
It's a real doorstop of a novel. I think it was about high 800, maybe early, maybe low 900 pages when it came out. He expanded this thing to cross the 1,000 page mark in the 90s.
At what point do you have to start making the book bigger, long ways?
Look, I think this is well past the point where if you picture this, you just...
Are there pictures? That makes sense. I can see why there's so many pages now. That's...
You're lying on your back. You're reading a book above you. You fall asleep. Oh. You don't want to drop Stephen King's The Stand on your own.
You need someone to spot you reading Stephen King.
Also, like some characters in other Stephen King works, spine damage. That's too many pages for you to keep your book intact. Mm. If you're all about showing off your library to your friends, The Stand is just going to get mutilated as you read it. Anyway, this series, it's got some good casting. Alexander Skarsgård is the big devilly villain, and so he brings a kind of good charisma to that.
I see why it's a series, though.
Yep. So this is it's a big long tale. It's got some very heavy-handed, it's so heavy-handed in places they barely don't function as metaphors. Like, it's just very on the nose. But probably the big difference between... the two big differences: one, we're living in a post-COVID world, so a story about a super flu which kills off a population probably has a little bit of interest.
We're kind of more current COVID, I think.
Yes, yeah, like sort of like COVID 1.1.
We're COVID-ing.
The other big difference from the previous miniseries version and the book is that they're both told chronologically. This one uses flashbacks. It's going to be something that if you don't want your king messed with, you're going to be aghast at. I kind of have been enjoying it as a concept, because it keeps the story moving along and it's not just a kind of long, then this happens, then this happens, then this happens. Mm. But it does kind of rob the story of a bit of surprise factor, and just by the very nature of kind of seeing things happen to characters in dual timelines, sort of robs a bit of the imminent threat from some of the things that happen. And as these characters navigate a post decimated world, sort of before the more apocalyptic supernatural things come into the story, which do emerge later on, there's kind of something about there's a threat waiting around every corner in a world depleted of 99% of its population. And knowing that these characters are kicking around in a bit more of a comfortable environment later on does take a bit of the oomph out of the story.
I do like post-apocalyptic. It is a good zone.
Yeah, and there's some definitely... Like, if you like the... if you like that sort of wish, almost wish fulfillment post-apocalyptic stuff, like, oh, no one's in the city. I can be like Bruno Lawrence in The Quiet Earth and do whatever I want.
Yeah, that's fun. That's fun.
Then that stuff is present here. But yeah, it's just a bit of a slog.
Scary?
Bit of a slog. Nah, not scary.
Okay.
Not scary. I think that there is...
John is pretty sensitive to the scary ones. He's not a massive fan of the scary ones.
That's fair. Well,
is that fair to say, John?
Depends.
Okay.
There's been a modicum of... There's been a modicum of violence. There's been a little bit of gore. Nothing too shocking. Probably the scariest thing so far is a sort of devilish Las Vegas that looks like a kind of burlesque steampunk party gone wrong. That's probably the thing that scared me the most today.
Steampunk is tricky. That's a tricky one to muck around with. I mean, look at Burning Man.
Yeah, and this is the Las Vegas presented in the show is probably the most joyless hedonism you'll ever see. It's kind of like one big carnival-y sex party, which just doesn't look fun.
Where can this be watched? Someone's asking.
You can watch this on Amazon Prime Video.
Okay.
And episodes are coming, but there's six out at the moment.
There you go.
And you know what? I'm going to watch it to the end, and then I'm going to groan about it.
Is The Mandalorian as good as everyone's talking about, by the way?
I dug The Mandalorian.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So it was just while I've got you here, I just thought, you know.
Watch it. It's good. And I think that in a short attention span world, those short episodes are good. Mm. And the fact that there is some forward momentum in the show, but many of those episodes are just self-contained, makes it a little snack. A little snack that I enjoyed on a weekly basis when it was rolling out.
Okay. And then straight on the blogs. Hey, everyone.
Straight on the blogs.
What were they doing with that character of Ning Nongs?
Straight to the comment sections. What do people have to say about this? What do people that know much more about Star Wars have to say about this? Sorry. So I said say, I meant complain.
That's true.
All right, Steve.
Cool. See you guys next week.
See ya.
Real auteurs use star wipes.
That was Flicks and That on 95BFM.